This show is about spoilers and discussion. It's also about spooky things that are best enjoyed after you see the movie. So any movie we talk about, we recommend you go see. You've been warned.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Horror. There is no shortage of monsters to haunt our dreams.
Horror. You got red on you.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Horror.
Alive. It's alive.
Groovy.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of Oh the Horror, a horror movie podcast where we look at classic and modern horror films from a casual and an expert's perspective. I'm the expert Rob Holmes.
And I'm the tender casual Steve Allman.
Wow, tender casual. That's
Yes, the tender casual. Things seem pretty I don't know how I feel after watching the movie that we just reviewed. I'm not quite sure, really.
Really? Because so we watched, this was 1993's Freaked, directed by Alex Winter and Tom Stern. Most of you, unless you have somehow found this on HBO or Showtime back in the day, you may be aware of it via the DVD and Blu-ray release, but you may never have heard of this movie. And that, to me, is a tragedy because I love this film.
This is a head-scratcher for me. Like, this, Alex Winter is a fascinating figure in Hollywood, you might say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's Bill from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Bogus Journey. He was in The Lost Boys. He was in Death Wish 3. He directed a lot of the Ben 10 TV movies and a lot of the episodes for the show. And now it looks like we're getting a Bill and Ted's 3 or Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure 3 or whatever. So I'm really excited about seeing
Bill and Ted Face the Music, apparently.
Yeah, Bill and Ted Face the Music. That's great. And I think they've hit the age, because he was talking years ago about saying, yeah, it'll get there eventually. It's not there yet. They wanted to be in their 50s by the time they hit it, and I think they are. So, yeah, now's the time for that. But anyway, Freaked. It is a very strange movie. Let me start off by giving a little backstory of how I got into Freaked. So, yeah, in the early 90s, you could find strange films, you know, on HBO or like Showtime or whatever. And this was one of those. And I used to take the old VHS tapes, take them from standard play and put them on extended play and, like, record movies. You know, you time them up to just stuff that it's like, oh, this is interesting and I want to see it. Because Freaked was never in my video store. I had heard about it via the, you know, the little, like, TV guide thing, and I was like, what, I'm gonna rent this, and I couldn't find it, so I just recorded it off there, and I watched it, and then I just watched it again, and I watched it again, and again, and again, and I was showing everyone I could, because this was the strangest thing I had ever seen, but the production value on it was so, it was very high for being what it was, for being such a strange film, and I fell in love with this movie, and it upset me so much that it's never gotten the credit it deserves. At least that's what I think.
I wouldn't really know what credit this movie does deserve.
It deserves all of the credit, man. Look, it has some of the greatest practical effects. I mean, they had to hire on three production companies, special effects houses, to work on this, because they were given a very short amount of time in pre-production. So
it definitely shows.
Yeah, I mean, you have like Screaming Mad George was working on some of it, I think, for part of it. And then you had Steve Johnson's effects company, and you had Alterian Inc. Coming in and working on that as well. So there was a lot of stuff going on. It was so much on the effect side, and they really put it into this film. I don't know why you're. Oh man, I thought you would love this movie.
I haven't even really expressed my actual opinion on this movie, and I think it's a head scratcher because in one hand I like it, and on the other hand I'm like annoyed by its storytelling, I guess. Even though this really isn't a movie that you see for the story, I clearly could only understand in like about an hour in that like this is clearly not about the story. Because we start this movie with a bit of a like this starts like a bit of a Simpsons episode where it's this cartoonish like overcast like thing of like he's at like this talk show and we have this shrouded figure about like, so you're finally ready to reveal yourself for the first time after your horrible disfigurement from this like Rachel Ray show. Now that's a cooking show, but like some sort of like Oprah like show where
sure
this touching story of a man.
It's the Sky Daily show with Sky right. Daily. Yeah,
yeah, and it's very tongue in cheek, very cartoonish, reflected through the whole movie. But the plot is very nonsensical.
What do you mean?
To get us where we need to be. It's just presented in such a way that I'm like, okay, here we go. This is what we're doing. All right. It's a very alarming setback from what we recently saw from these previous two like French.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, absolutely.
It's by comparison horror films.
I mean, I see there being a full through line in it, and I understand where the plot is. It kind of feels like one of those, like a movie like The Naked Gun or something like that, where there's a through line the entire way, but there are those sight gags, and it's very absurdist humor. And, you know, they were coming off of doing the show The Idiot Box, the Tom Stern and Alex Winter, and they were doing that for MTV, and it was very absurdist type sketch comedy, because in the early 90s, Fox, or not Fox, but MTV was picking that stuff up left and right. They were all over it, with shows like The State and, you know, as well. So seeing how, you know, they had that, originally this movie was supposed to be just a hardcore splatter horror movie with a $100,000 budget starring the Butthole Surfers. And then it evolved from there. When they were doing the show, they started working on it more, and they brought in one of their other they brought in Tim Burns, who had worked with them on The Idiot Box, and he did some rewrites with them, and they changed it. They set it in like a sideshow, a freak show, and it became Hideous Mutant Freaks. And then they ended up getting it sold to Fox. Fox loved it, and the guy who was in charge at the time gave them, it was like a $12 or $13 million budget, and he really thought this was going to be something amazing. They have toys of these characters. Like they made toys. They had all, like a comic book thing. They had all of this stuff that they were going to pump into it. And, you know, throughout the film's process, like that's why it looks as good as it does, for what it is. And then when he, you know, the guy who was in charge, I think it was the CEO at the time, he ends up getting fired, and or the executive, you know, the gets fired, and they bring in a new studio head. That's what it is, studio head. And the studio head's like, yeah, this is weird, I don't like it. And they, you know, it didn't test well with audiences, because they, a lot of them didn't really understand what was going on. So they cut out the entire post-production budget, or at least most of it. So they never got a soundtrack. They ended up basically, they were like, Hideous Mutant Freak sounds terrible, we're going to cut it down, we're going to call it Freaked. And then also in the deal that happened, this was meant to be a hard R. It was definitely going to be a very vulgar and very violent. But in order to, you know, get it for the $13 million, they were like, you got to make it PG-13, and they agreed to that. I think it works. I do think that it does make this film a little more juvenile than it should be.
Interesting. So it seemed to be neutered out the gate before it was even coming into production.
Yeah, and then it
from
got
what it was.
Right, and then it got pulled from theaters after, I think they barely released it in anything. They were like, the studio at that point said, "Oh, we wasted millions of dollars. We've cut the budget here. We've cut the marketing budget to nothing." It released in a handful of theaters, and it grossed like $29,000. That was it. So they took a huge hit on this movie. When if they had just said, you know what, let's just release it as what it is, it would have at least made more than $29,000.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, we're always interested when commerce sort of dictates art for like from like the vision of one director, and you can't say that this movie does not have a vision. I will say that a mad dash cartoonish, insane vision. that I kind of have to respect for the sheer amount of work that they put into it alone is something that's quite a sight to behold. And I think the main takeaway here is all of these insane characters and gags that they try to put into all of this stuff. So, like, Randy Quaid is a mad scientist. Let's just get that out of the bat. Get that right off the bat. Mad scientist, just possessed on, like, turning people into freaks that won't be part of the audience members. I'm not quite sure why he chooses who he chooses, but it's a very select bunch of characters that they seem to pull from. And I'm kind of in awe of the wild wonderment of the rainbow of characters that they've gotten here for this. They have Randy Quaid. They have Mr. T in a wonderful, oddly progressive role as the bearded lady,
yeah,
whose backstory is actually kind of incredible.
Very, very short, but like to the point, you know?
Yeah, no, but he was just like, I was a confused traveler, and he suggested that I'd be better without a dick. And I said, yeah. And it turns out I actually wanted to be a woman in the first
place.
Yeah,
but he's like, but you
like,
can
that's
keep...
rather
but
touching.
I like how he gets mad for a second. He's like, oh, but you can keep the beard. And then he's totally okay with it.
It's like, but that's part of me too. And I'm like, you know what? Good for you, movie. That's very, very. And then we have Bobcat Goldthwait as Sock Boy.
Socko.
Or Socko, excuse me.
Yeah,
Socko.
Yeah. So we have. Let's go through some of these freaks. Now, first off, before we get to, we have Alex Winter. He's awesome. We have Randy Quaid as Elijah C. Scuggs. I think
really hamming it up, trying to pull a Robin Williams.
Dude, whoa, way beyond Robin Williams. Robin Williams wishes he could be Randy Quaid in this role. Randy Quaid, dude, this is the greatest thing Randy Quaid has ever done. This is the greatest character he has ever been. He is Elijah C. Scuggs, and it is amazing. You have William Sadler in it, which it's always great to see William Sadler. Megan Ward, who was like really big in the early 90s in a lot of horror films. She was in the movie Arcade back in 1993, I think the same year as this, with Seth Green was in that. And then Michael Stoyanov, who is the older brother from Blossom, who is the ambulance driver. Yeah, Mr. T, you have Brooke Shields, Bobcat Goldthwait. And then the
crown jewel.
Well, you have John Hawks, out of all people. Like, John Hawks, who you know from... he's on a lot of different TV shows and films lately. Like, now he's kind of a bigger actor. But at the time, he was playing Cowboy. So that's him under all that prosthetic makeup and animatronics,
man,
for the mouth.
I actually love the idea of Cowboy.
Yeah, I think Cowboy's... I mean, that's what I think is really great about this film. It's very... Each one of these characters, it's like a comic book or an insane drawing come to life. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. And the best one of all... Keanu Reeves in an uncredited role as Ortiz, the dog boy. Dude, he got paid $1 million to be in that.
I'd believe it. Because Keanu Reeves was hot shit back in the day. And he probably didn't want his fucking name attached to this because it's probably not going to... It was not critically well received.
Well, it didn't... It barely even saw the light of day, so...
Exactly. But that's the thing. Like, I'm almost certain that Keanu Reeves' people did not want his name attached to it. I'd imagine that he wouldn't. Because he's clearly doing his friend Alex a favor. Like, this is like, hey, we had a great time with Bill and Ted. Won't you be in my movie? Like, sure, absolutely.
Well, you know, they also thought that at the time that this was going to be a huge hit. Fox put the money into it because when the studio head was there, he believed... it was going to be a massive hit. So I think that was one of the things that it wasn't until they were hitting, you know, at the end of filming and editing, when they're editing and piecing the stuff together is when they really hit major, major hurdles. At least that's what I think from what I've investigated on it. Now, yeah, I just think $1 million for an uncredited role in the film is just absolutely insane.
It's crazy. It's a pretty good. I'm guessing that's the most any actor in this film ever got paid.
Oh, in this, yeah, they had to have, because it's $13 million budget, and that's at the most. I mean, it got cut down, so it probably cut to 11 or 10 or maybe more than that. But looking at what $1 million just for one person who's in a handful of scenes of the film,
right? It's the weirdest, wildest thing that this movie exists, let alone what this movie was supposed to be.
Yeah, and we haven't even... Oh, my God. So really brief rundown of the film. I guess I'll give you, like, you know, the cliff notes on it. Yeah, Skye Daly, she's, you know, this host, she's interviewing Ricky, and that's Brooke Shields, is interviewing Ricky Coogan, Alex Winter, about how he, you know, was this actor who everyone loved in these, you know, ghost dude movies and all these really strange films, but people loved him, to now, like, kids would scream in terror when they hear his name. So he's like, all right, I'll tell this story, and he talks about how he got a job promoting Zygrot 24, which is this controversial fertilizer through EES, which is
everything but shoes.
Yeah, everything except shoes, and it's great. And William Sadler is the guy who's in charge of that.
Their logo is literally a shoe with a symbol crossed out.
Yeah, it's great. They offer him $5 million to go and promote this. He's like, yeah, wasn't that stuff toxic? And they're like, well, yeah, okay, it is, but here's $5 million. So they end up going on this flight, he and his buddy Ernie, which is Michael Stoyanov's character, and then they run into his number one fan, Stewie Gluck.
A
giant-eared, goofy-looking basically Stewie Gluck.
He's
amazing.
He's Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine.
Yeah, he kind of is Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine. Yeah, he's
actually
like the young...
is Alfred E. Newman.
It's like
I feel like they've ripped his design wholesale and just be like, make him like a whiny kid from Leave It to Beaver. That's exactly what this guy is.
It's such a good character. Like it's so well portrayed by Alex Zuckerman. Like, it's all of these characters that come together that I think makes this movie what it is. And there are issues with it, sure, which we'll get into a little bit. Yeah, so, you know, they arrive in Santa Flan in South America, which is named for the patron saint of creamy desserts. And they end up seeing Julie, an environmentalist, played by Megan Ward. And they con her into thinking that they're environmentalists because Ricky is trying to hit on her, and then they're like, oh, come with us, and we'll go to this anti-Zygrot 24 protest with you. And then he's tricked her, and I'm like, well, that's kind of weird that you tricked this girl to go where? To where
she's
going?
Also really shitty. Like,
yeah,
you're tricking her to just go on a trip with you, essentially what... Like, you're taking her away from her cause just to be like, hey, hang out with me.
But whatever, she's, you know, she goes for it, I guess, and then is kind of pissed at him and talks about human suffering, but then is so excited to see that there's a freak show.
And which is also so weird because they are very, very not cool with like her being an environmentalist or an activist or any sort of like social awareness from what she is, because she's like touting out these like very well articulated arguments about things at like the drop of a hat. And then they're just like, oh, women, right?
Well, it's a very anti... I mean, what they're doing in the characters are very... They're anti-PC, right? And then that's what she represents. We're also talking about the early 90s, too, and if she's coming...
Oh, sure,
out,
no. It was absolutely a different time, but, like, right. It's very endemic now of the time that we're in. We're like, ooh, oh, boy.
Yeah. And then, yeah, they arrive at this... They see that there's a freak show, and they arrive there, and we get introduced to Elijah C. Scuggs, Randy Quaid, and Toad. His sidekick, who, not sidekick, but kind of his henchman. He looks amazing, and like watching what he can do definitely ups the ante, where you're like, oh man, something's gonna go down really, really soon. Especially when he just grabs the bunny and just pulls the entire bunny into his mouth. And then, yeah, we find out that Elijah is creating freaks using Zygrot 24 with his tasty freaks machine, and turns Julie and Ernie into like a Siamese twin duo, where they're both, you know, half man, half woman. Decides
with the craziest energy I think I've ever seen a transformation take place, where like we just see like this random like cyclops head and a horse, and then like a masturbating Gumby.
Yeah, it's a masturbating Gumby.
That's okay. That is what I saw. I wanted to make sure that is exactly what I saw, and that's what I saw.
Yeah, so Julie and Ernie are turned into a pair of conjoined twins, And then Ricky is turned into this beast boy, a half man, half monster. So then, you know, we find out that he lives in an outhouse. That's where he keeps all the freaks, but it's basically a TARDIS. So it's much bigger on the inside because Bob Vila showed him how to do it twice. And then he's, you know, eventually he's got to put a shitter in there one of these days.
That's actually one of my favorite gags because it's how annoyed Bob Vila was when he's ready to brag about the fact that he learned it from Bob Vila, but he's like, fuck, shut up, Bob.
Yeah, and then he's
we're
just
not here for you.
Because Bob just keeps coming in. It's just like, well, you know, Elijah.
He's here to help.
Yeah. And then, yeah, we get introduced to all the freaks. Keanu Reeves introduces everybody as Ortiz the dog boy.
They're playing Hollywood Squares.
Yeah, Hollywood Squares. That's what it
from
is.
From the image
Hollywood
up,
Squares.
Up at the top. And this is our introduction to the rest of the freaks. And, yep. It's very like the energy in this movie, like you kind of, it's almost sensory overload for seeing all of these characters in like the span of 30 seconds because you can't really take in everything that's being shown to you. You have the man with the giant, giant nose that's just like this insane thing to look at.
Nosy the Nose Man. Yeah,
Nosy the Nose Man.
Nosy the Nose Man. You got Cowboy, half man, half cow, the Bearded Lady, which is Mr. T. Sockhead, who's a dude who a fisherman who has a sock puppet for a head. The Eternal Flame, a guy who's just farting forever and it's on fire.
That to me was the dumbest one because when I hear the Eternal Flame and then I think of the Eternal when they show the Eternal Flame, I'm like, oh god, of course it's a fart joke.
Right.
Of course
it's
a fart joke.
And that's some of the base humor stuff in it.
It. But
and
I'm just like, of course, that's the Eternal Flame for this movie.
Right, no, and that's some of the issue that I have with it, but it's very, I overlook it very pretty easily just because this movie is just so insane. Rosie the Pinhead, which it's great, it's a great design for
it. It's a very good design, yeah. Let's just leave it at that.
Very, very strange. The Hideous Frogman, which is just a French guy who has a scuba suit, and then the skeleton,
which I actually laughed out loud in because I think that design of a scuba suit is the funniest thing to me, even though it's just a scuba suit.
I love he's just like rah, and then just waves.
But he's just normal. Like
he's just a dude who's wearing a scuba suit. Who's French? That's it. I don't
he's
know.
He's hanging
what he
out. Yeah. He's here.
And then the skeleton of Paul Lind.
Which is too funny. That actually was great.
Oh, and we haven't mentioned the worm.
Oh yeah,
the worm is a great character design for it because you never really see the seams around the face at all. It's all blended in extremely well, and the movement for it. And this is where I'll give, you know, the practical effects in this, and I will say it repeatedly throughout this podcast for this episode in particular, top notch. There's very little that they could have done better with what they had. Very, very little.
Effects wise, you mean?
In practical effects wise, yeah. There's like one or two things where later in the movie, Ricky's mouth, when he's the giant full beast, when he opens it, you can see like the fabric in the back of the mouth, but that's like so minor and only if you're just poking holes in something, especially something so ridiculous and absurd as this.
Yeah, it's not exactly something that you need to be worrying about. So I think we've examined most of the characters that have been brought into this. So I think I want to kind of talk about the structure of this as a movie, because coming up to like near the end of the show, we want to actually talk about like, I mean, as amazing as the practical effects are, the structure of making this a movie, despite all of its problems in pre-production, still kind of falls on its face a bit.
See, I don't think so at all. I think
when I say falls on its face, it doesn't really present anything in the form of plot as opposed to like setting up scenarios for gags to put these characters in until maybe the last 20 minutes of the movie.
I mean, there's a lot of exposition that goes into it. So, I mean, maybe we should push through, you know, the rest of the story real quick, and then
put on a freak show for a decent scene. But
I mean, at this point, we've got Stewie who's trying to get Ricky back. He's, you know, he wants to rescue him. He finds he has a telepathic bond with him, right? So we have the plot moving forward on that. Ricky also thinks
for
that
some
he's
reason
gonna get, well,
yeah,
he also
he
thinks he's going to get rescued too. I mean, dude, this movie has a half man, half cow. And a guy who's a sock puppet for a head, anything in this film is possible, which is why I like it, because it feels like it takes place in a cartoon world that has
very
come
true.
To life
very
that
true.
Has come it's, to life in a very well realized way.
It has a cartoon sensibility to it, even in its own flashbacks, where it like every flashback is represented in like this sepia toned like ragtime soundtrack. Type of flashback, even though it happened maybe a year ago, not even
yeah,
like
it
that's
sounds,
how you represent the old times.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like Mayberry, like basically going
back and
doing something like that, like Andy Griffith's show, where it's like a little scene and then we cut back. I that's the type of stuff I like. There's a lot of technique in this film that stands out to me, and it just showed a ton of creativity going into it. Now, I mean, I get that they, you know, they hadn't really directed a lot of stuff before, at least on film, you know, so this is, they're using 35 millimeter. They haven't really filmed on this type of stuff before, or they haven't filmed on this type of stuff before, and they haven't really done a feature yet. So this is like their first feature, but to me, it's an amazing first feature. It's so strange and innovative. It's so strange and innovative and just kind of stands out from any other film, really, that I've ever seen. And I know people talk about, okay, parody films, they're parodying something in particular. And this one wasn't really doing that. It kind of stood on its own. And I didn't really see it as much of a parody film as in, I think it's been described as like an issue of Mad Magazine come to life. If it were a full story, it's like that style of stuff mixed in with this absurdist, very The State and Idiot Box humor that was that type of comedy that was going on at the time, and the fact that they were able to do something, you know, that so we had already had a movie like the Garbage Pail Kids movie that was using a lot of these effects type stuff and a lot of practical things that were like, wow, it's weird and gross and crazy. But that movie is terrible. I think Freaked is extremely entertaining the entire time. And while it is not a perfect movie, personally think it's damn close. Like, it's just a favorite of mine. Like, it holds a place near and dear in my heart.
Here's what I will say about this. I give this probably a A to triple S plus for effort. This movie is nothing if not for a lack of trying. Ambitious, you know, I can't possibly think of a movie that tries to do more in the span of 20 minutes that in movies have tried to do in 3 hours, from scene to scene, like jumping across settings to introducing probably like 20 characters in the span of a minute, the insane amount of gags and humor and sight gags, like it reminds me of something that is like almost vaudevillian in the type of like acts that just kind of come in and out, that are like something mixed with like Three Stooges and an issue of Mad Magazine all kind of bundled up into one. It's an insane type of movie, and even if all of the things don't necessarily work, there is definitely something to be said about all of the hard work and effort put into it. I could easily see how people don't understand and don't like this movie because it's just kind of like boner and fart jokes a lot of the time as well. But like I can easily understand like the actual like craftsmanship put into a lot of this stuff. And I respect it. I do. I really do. And there are rather enjoyable parts of this. I think Randy Quaid is obviously a standout. I think the stunt casting of Mr. T and Keanu Reeves is a sight to behold, even though you can't really even tell that that's Keanu Reeves. It's a head scratcher of a movie that I kind of can't help but recommend, actually.
Yeah, and
only so that you know that what you were seeing.
Yeah, and let's finish. We'll finish up the plot stuff. We'll talk a little more about it. So yeah, this is where it kind of turns, right? So, you know, we see the actual freak show, like what goes on there, and it does fill up. It is an attraction where a lot of people are there. and we have Ricky, you know, finally performing, and he decides he's going to do his own thing, and he does Shakespeare, and I loved what he did in this. I thought it was great. And then you have this guy Nigel who's from Oxford, and he's like, oh yeah, and there's subtitles for like the culturally impaired. So as he's going through this monologue, you get all these subtitles of "I'm ugly, I don't get laid," and then everyone's like, oh, this is amazing. And it seems like it's a big upturn for him as his character. It's like, oh, okay, he's going to understand what it's like to be a freak and be happy with it, and maybe it'll work out for a while. All of a sudden, EES shows up. They basically screw him over and are like, yeah, we're not going to help you at all. Like, sorry, buddy, we've got more important things. Money. And he loses it and just rips the guy's head off right there. Just pops it off like it's like popping a cork out of a bottle. It's so great. It's such a cool moment. Mass chaos ensues. And that's when it amps up. Like, right at that moment, it's already been kind of crazy before, but you're kind of getting the establishing of what's going on. But at that point, we find out, you know, Elijah's been in bed with EES the entire time. He's getting it from the Laughing Man, who is William Sadler's character. So, you know, you're like, oh, okay, this is why it's all happening. And he is going to become like the full Beast Boy. Like, he will become this, he's going to finish the process live on stage and have him kill all of the freaks. And he's like, I'm not having that. So Ricky gets everybody together and is like, I've got an idea. Like, we're going to do something, and he wants me to kill all of you guys, but I'm not going to do that. And I love that moment where everybody starts filling in the plan that Ricky never like, came up with.
Right. And they're like, and I will do this and we'll do that. And like, it's that great, like, I actually kind of really, this was when I was officially on board for the movie, where I was like, oh, okay, so this is what this movie's going to be now. I felt like the movie was messing about for that amount of time. And I was really just confused as to where, like, we were actually going. And now that I knew that, like, there was a conspiracy and we have this whole grand plan where we're going to dress up and all this stuff, I'm like, all right, so it's going to be this weird, like, kooky, not so much heist, but like a plan, you know. This is where, like, it actually felt really fun for me then.
Yeah, and you got to, oh, and then I forgot about I and I.
Oh my God, I and I. What a great, great idea for...
Insane idea, but so well executed.
Very well done.
Rastafarian pot-smoking...
like eyeballs.
Eyeballs with machine guns, who are his henchmen.
Yeah, it's you got to imagine what goes on in the creative mind that breeds that.
That it's the touches like that, and then the 12 milkmen is theoretically possible. 13 yeah. Is ridiculous.
Oh my God.
It's just great moments like that.
It's all that baffling stuff that kind of comes together in such a crazy way that, like, I can't help but kind of be in awe as to what this movie's trying to do. It's crazy.
And then we get the introduction of Super Mega Freakland, which is just a larger scale version of Freakland. And then you realize that EES is totally going to screw over Elijah when he... finally is like, you know, Stewie is going to somehow save the day and grab the good goop. They made some good goop, because they, you know, the freaks were like, oh, we can get in there with the plan that everyone else came up with. And the actual plan that Ricky had was, I thought we were going to go and get some sea monkeys. He's like, hey, yes, well, yeah, that we're going to go and order some sea monkeys and train them to fire machine guns. But you know what? Yeah. We'll go with your plan. So they break in, they get the salve or the mixture or whatever it is, like that goop. He loses it. Like he doesn't even get it. So Stewie has to get it, but they did get a delicious batch of macaroons.
That's, yeah.
But Worm doesn't like macaroons, which is disappointing because macaroons are delicious.
They really are.
Yeah. So we end up, you know, at that final moment, the freak show's happening. He's about to put the stuff on Ricky and turn him into the full-blown freak. And Stewie ends up getting this stuff poured all over him and turning into a giant Stewie freak. And then there's a huge battle.
This crazy transformation and battle. Because you've said that this has gone through all of these, like, kind of tumultuous production things. Like, when you get to that moment, though, that's actually, like, there's a slight curve of, like, comprehension that I was going through that, like, by the time that moment happened, I was actually, oh, no, like, now I'm fully on board for all this crazy, like, it is so dense and so hard to, like, I implore people to try to stick with this until the end of the movie that I have to recommend it only because of the, it only gets insaner.
It's not a hard movie to watch, man. It seems like you're almost saying, like, I implore you to just push through it. I think it's amazing. Like, there's not much that I have problems with. Maybe a little bit of the juvenile humor, and that's about it. Other than that,
that just kept making me go, like, what? Why? Huh?
Right, right.
Because all of the other things that make this movie quality, I'm just like, oh, like, you're still, you would do that. But then I keep suspend that disbelief and, like, have a bit of, like, okay, let's get out of the comfort zone of this type of, like, sentiment, and it's just a goofy thing. And, like, I was trying to put it into a box as to what it was, and that was probably, like, a lot of the... I was probably in the mindset of a lot of Fox executives back when it was actually being debuted as to why this was the problem. And, you know what? I just didn't get it at the first time, but I definitely feel like I could easily go for a second viewing of this and actually have a different appreciation for it. Based on that ending alone.
Yeah, I mean, the ending, oh my god, the ending is amazing. Like, just the way it ramps up, once the Stewie fight happens, and then everything from that then on, when Elijah goes up against Ricky, and then finding out the reveal for Sky, and then just, you get to see, it kind of wraps it up in a nice bow, but at the same time, there is part of me that wanted more in this world. Like, I want to explore this world more because the world itself is so strange. Like, even when they get saved, like, the FBI shows up at the end, but they're like, oh, you made it. And they're like, oh, yeah, we've been following you this entire time. But first we had to check, you know, on the National Enquirer or whatever it is, on page, like, 2 and 3 because of the house that dripped blood and this, like, demon baby or something. That to me is, I love that stuff. I think it's, but they own it. That's the thing too. It's not like they're trying to, I don't feel like they try to ham it up too much. I feel like they're just like, this is the world and we own it for what it is.
Yeah. And it definitely establishes itself in this weird slapdash cartoony world, from scene one, and it stays there. And you are just along for the ride.
Right, because, I mean, what does it parody? It doesn't really parody anything.
I guess it does.
There's small things.
You can see it as, like, an ode to, I assume, like, the type of humor that Mad Magazine and, like, early cartoons did. And, like, maybe even, like, in a weird way, like, silent film gags, in a bit of a weird way, because there's a lot of, like, sight gags that, like, are kind of universal that, like, you didn't even need dialogue for, that I was kind of impressed by, like, way back in the beginning of the movie when they're on the airplane and, like, the hatch door just opens up for the
airplane.
And, like, kid flies out, the guy in wheelchair flies out, and then the flight attendant just calmly closes the door, and then nothing else. Like, that was an insane bit of comedic timing that I'm just like, whoa, that's actually incredible.
Yeah,
you guys pulled that off.
I love that moment, especially, I love how calmly she's just walks over, closes it like it's nothing.
Like it's a draft. It's like...
And then right after that, you get Stewie when he falls down and hits the ground. Like, you see the hay pile and then him just hitting the ground so hard, and it's hilarious, him just getting back up, but then the binder hits him right on the head. And
that's what really hurts.
It really caps that moment. And they just do this throughout the film. They just pepper in stuff. And it doesn't always hit. Sure, some of the references are dated.
He's like, no Christian Slater, I think, was probably the one that dated it pretty well.
Oh, dude, I think the skeleton of Paul Lynde is probably one of the ones that dated the most. But then there's a lot of stuff that's still relevant. I mean, he talks about, I wonder if they're still casting Gremlins 3. We're still waiting on a Gremlins 3 that is in, that's actually, I think, in development right now. So if you were to watch this film today, a lot of it is still extremely relevant.
Yeah, it is.
The chemical companies, the EES Corporation, we have that now. There are companies that have become more like an EES than anything else than it was back even in the 90s. So I know people...
It is kind of crazy to see that, like, this omnipresent company that kind of owns everything and is just doing odd, weird shit out in the boonies of nowhere, makes a, like, one crazy guy is given all the power from this company just to see what he can do.
In Santa Flan, South America, that's, and it, you know, it's like this place in the middle of nowhere where, yeah, he's just a mad scientist who has his own freak land, just doing whatever he wants to. It's a very Island of Dr. Moreau, except more, with a little bit of Jurassic Park, because I know that they do reference Jurassic Park a little bit in it when they go through into freak land the first time, and the way that the Jeep moves across.
And then there's, like, a big copyright infringement sign right next to it. It's like, it is the property of all these subsidiaries and
of Elijah C. Scuggs.
Like, it's got, like, that, this, like, very, very, very tongue-in-cheek, like, cheeky type of humor at every turn. Like, pound for pound, it's got so much.
It's great. It makes me wish that there were more films like this, I wish that this had been successful so we would have gotten more films like this. It is very disappointing that it didn't get the admiration that I believe that it deserves.
And that's the thing, today especially, but even so much back then, I feel like this is a pretty brave movie to be made. Based on the vision and the type of things that they wanted to do in it. And again, like, I can't help but not respect it because it's a pretty bold thing to do.
I want to see this movie get released now in theaters.
I mean, there's certainly an audience for it. That's for sure. From the online reception of this movie is like, people are like insanely like, I've been looking for this movie. Like, why hasn't this been getting some from the comments of, like, the YouTube section that I actually found this movie on, it was like, why isn't this movie, like, this movie's insane. Why aren't we doing this with it? Like, why hasn't there been more talk about, like, there is definitely an audience for these types of very strange, very niche, very bold and wild movies with these incredible practical effects and character work that is not seen at all, or even really even beforehand. Like, this is a very unique movie.
It is a very unique movie, and it would have been great to see, you know, more stuff like that, because, you know, we had Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It was the practical effects, the suits that that they were using. They had this. They were, you know, Jim Henson and his crew were doing a lot of stuff. Dark Crystal and Labyrinth in the 80s, but transitioning into the 90s, and it would have been really cool to just see more of this kind of takeover over CGI. Now, you know, CGI is great as a tool to help assist. It just doesn't need to be the forefront, and I think this movie is proof of what you're able to do without using CG.
I mean, it's akin to, in a weird way, Peter Jackson movie that we reviewed for this show.
Oh, Dead Alive for Brain
Dead. Dead Alive. It very much is akin to Dead Alive for me. Because that, again, it's very cartoonish, very bright, very colorful, very weird type of humor. But again, incredible effects, incredible vision that's wholly uncompromised. And it's really something to behold.
Yeah. So, I mean, that being said, you know, this is a full 100% recommend for me. This is one of my favorite movies ever. Just ever. Not even just horror, just movies ever.
You will definitely see, again, like that, the pinnacle of being some of the best practical and, like, puppetry and character work that I have ever really seen. It's really, really good.
Yeah, it is. It is fantastic.
Also a recommend from me.
Awesome, man. I'm glad to hear that. I'm really, really glad that you enjoyed it, despite its, you know,
it was odd. It was difficult. Yeah. I will say that.
And that's
it's very jarring to see a movie like this, because movies like this aren't made really. And I think that I can say that it's a good film. It's just not the most accessible one for a lot of people. Because some people won't appreciate it. I can see somebody not appreciating this movie, but I want everybody to try.
Yes, I can definitely see that there are some people who really do not appreciate this movie. I've seen some reviews online, and I'm just thinking, wow, man, this, out of all films, is what you hate? This is the film you hate the most? Have you seen 5 movies in your entire life? I mean, that's what... Anyway, that's not the point. Point is, this movie is amazing, and I love it. So next week, we're delving into practical effects again, but we are moving towards 2017. So we are going to take a look at The Void.
Yes, The Void.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun one. This is a big practical effects movie, but this is not a funny film. There's no real humor in this. It's very, very dark, very akin to, you know, a 1970s cult style film, like a supernatural cult thing.
I'm excited for this one. This one has a cool look. It's a groovy looking film.
It really is, and it shows what you can do with a very low budget. It was under $100,000 for this film. So
a lot of good work put into this one.
A ton of good work. But anyway, we will talk about that next week. So thanks for listening, and we will have another episode for you next week. I've been Rob Holmes.
And I've been Steve Allman. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and Facebook. And basically wherever you can find us on wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, all of those great websites, Spotify. Check us out. Give us a review. Give us input for the show. Let us know what you feel, what you think about it. And we'll see you next time. I've been Steve Allman. And have a good week, guys. We'll see you next time.
All right. Thanks, guys. I've been Rob Holmes. Have a good one.
Look at me, Damien.
Time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.